I have begun when I'm weary and can't decide an answer to a bewildering question to ask my dead friends for their opinion. And the answer is often immediate and clear. Should I take the job, move to the city? Should I try to conceive a child in my middle age? They stand in unison, shaking their heads and smiling. Whatever leads to joy, they answer, to more life and less worry. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan, Kansas. Whether you come this morning weary because you had to get up earlier or are filled with joy, I invite you to greet your neighbors with warmth and joy. May these small exchanges between each other, among one another, help us to grow more genuine, more authentic, more able to bring loving kindness into ourselves and to share it with the world. In a house which becomes a home, one hands down and another takes up the heritage of mind and heart. Laughter and tears, musings and deeds, love like a carefully loaded ship crosses the gulf between the generations. We light this chalice for the children who have been here, who are here now, and those who come after us. Let us hold up the light. Thank you. So let us now stand with one another as you are able and sing the opening hymn 349, We Gather Together. I have a few announcements that I would like to share this morning. MAPJ will sponsor a lecture on the Middle East this coming Tuesday at 7:30, K-State Leadership Studies Town Hall Room. The speaker is Philip Bennis. Oh. What did I say? Philip? I read Phyllis. Oh, well. That's what happens when you go away to a warm climate for a while. And the other thing I'd like to share with you is our upcoming regional annual meeting, which will be held in Topeka this year on Friday, April 11th through the 13th. And in, as a part of this great effort of bringing many UUs together across the 12 states that we are a part of, our choir director, Michael O'Father, will help lead some amazing music on Sunday morning, and we will be looking at why Kansas is a good place to live. There are good stories. There are true stories, and we are going to lift them up. And there are lots of workshops. There's music and entertainment. So check it out on our UUA website. Hunger for Justice is the title of our annual gathering. And Harriet.
Our aesthetics committee has felt the need for some visual stimulation up here. We brought our, Ann Marshall and I have been working on this, and we brought our idea to the Council of Committees or Committee on Committees, and they seemed to think it was a good idea. And yeah, and there will be one will hang here and one on the other side, so it will leave the center clear for any visuals that would be here. The theme, you'll notice it's a vine. The theme is growing together, and each leaf will represent an individual. We have fabric pens for each of you to write your name on one leaf, and I'd like for the kids to do this too. We have counted the leaves. There are plenty. We have a table set up in the back, and afterwards, if you would sign your name, and hopefully we'll have enough left that if we, when we get new members, that they will have room to sign them too. So each leaf is different. We're all individuals. We're all a little different, but we are together on this vine growing together.
Ours is a welcoming community where we find connection, a loving community where we find meaning. Ours is a sharing community where our joys are amplified, a sharing community where our sorrows are lessened. We take this moment to reflect on our joys and sorrows and acknowledge the mutual support of this, our community. If you would like, please share a brief personal verbal expression of a special joy or sorrow now.
Jim Chanteau. I have, it's a concern, a joy, and a solution all in one. Yesterday morning, just as I was waking up, I received a phone call, very hard to hear, from someone saying, "Grandpa, I'm in trouble." And I blurted out before I knew it my granddaughter's name. And she proceeded to tell me this terrible story of how she and a friend had ended up in a trip at the last minute to the Dominican Republic. And had taken a taxi cab ride, and the taxi cab driver had marijuana, was arrested, and they arrested everybody in the taxi. She has spent the night in jail and needed some money to get a bond hearing before a judge. That's the story. It was going to take $1,900. I they said, well, you have to go down and send a money order and so forth and so on. And I said, I can't do that right away. It's going to take some while to get the money together. In the meantime, during the pause, I thought maybe I ought to call the American Embassy in the Dominican Republic, which I did. I was 5 seconds into the story, and the woman said, stop, it's a scam. They've been doing this all over the place. They've been calling elderly people in the United States about stories of either grandsons or granddaughters here that have been in a taxi and then get arrested. The joy part of it is I got to talk to everybody in my family yesterday trying to find out where my granddaughter was, and I even talked to her in the end. She was in class at the time this was all going on. What we worked out is, and this is something that everyone should do, and this reason I'm telling this story, is work out something with your sons, daughters, granddaughters, great-granddaughters, whatever, that only they would know and that you could ask them. Because the phone connection was bad. It was at a time I had just woken up. I wasn't thinking clearly. And so you need to know what your secret question is going to be. If I had it, we could have settled this whole thing in 5 seconds. But we didn't have it worked out in advance. Now we do. The woman I talked to in the embassy said, warn everybody, this scam has been going on and has been quite successful. I talked to somebody else yesterday, and they said about 2 to 5% of the time it works.
Okay.
The American Embassy, Dominican Republic, Santiago. The woman I talked to there was very helpful, and she said, you know, it's been happening too much. They can't do much once the money's there because they only represent the American government. They do not represent the Dominican Republic's government. So anyway, word of warning, they're apparently hitting people in Manhattan. So.
All right. Thank you, Jim.
I was just going to make a quick thing. I was in McPherson Friday night for an alumni banquet thing, and one of the people being specially honored was from Warrensburg, Missouri, and they said he was a Unitarian. And so I, you know, had to go over and talk to him afterwards, and had to tell him I was giving my Unitarian magazines to my brother-in-law who lives there, I mean, that I was staying with, and one of his old professors. Anyway, this Unitarian from Missouri said, when we have visitors or people new to the fellowship, we tell them, we can't answer your questions, but we can question. We will question your answers.
I have a tremendous joy. Once I get my house sold down in Alabama, I am coming home to Kansas.
All right, welcome.
Kristen Corwin, many of you know of my friend and colleague, Jane Peterson, who went missing in January and was found last week and was laid to rest yesterday. And I'm very glad that the family can now find closure. Thank you.
May we remember those who have spoken, those they have spoken about, those they have named, and those we all hold in our hearts. Hold them dear, hold them tender.
This piece we're singing was commissioned for the Heartland Men's Chorus, the gay chorus in the Gay Men's Chorus in Kansas City, and Kathleen and I heard its debut 2 years ago this month, and I said then, we have to sing this. We are going to do that. If anything goes wrong, it won't be the fault of the singers. It won't be the fault of the pianist. You will know at whom to direct your concerns.
Come on over here, closer to me. Come on. Can you hear me? Does that work out all right? Come on. Ah, all right. Do any of you have a grandmother or a grandfather? Do you like your grandmother or do you like your grandfathers? Are they pretty special to you? Yeah, right? Well, this is a story about my grandmother, Mor Olga, kind of a store, Mor Olga. See, y'all, nay, you can enter the store. Varfor? Oh, I forgot. You don't speak Swedish, do you? No, of course not, but my grandmother did. She was from Sweden, and Sweden is a long way across the ocean, way up north, and she grew up in a beautiful valley called Granumsdal. And she loved the little farm and the creek and the woods and the hills and the lakes and the streams, but she was a very curious girl, very curious. She was always opening up a cabinet, and min mor's mor Elsa, nay, Olga, nay. And then she would open up something else, nay, Olga, nay, du kan inte, you can't do that. And Olga was always opening something and always looking into something, always trying to find out what was behind that door. And then one day, after a very cold and long winter, when it seemed like the sun would never come back, it finally came out, and the daisies were blooming, and the flowers, the buttercups were blooming. Everything was coming to life, and she was happy. The birds were singing. They didn't have to haul firewood into the house every night. And she stopped by the well. Does everyone know what a well is? A wishing well, exactly right. So my grandmother looked over the stone round circle and into the water that was below. Oh, how could I be in the sky, she thought. How could I be in the sky when I'm looking down? She couldn't understand. She was only 4 or 5. She didn't understand it was a reflection on the water, so she reached down, and she couldn't touch it. She wanted to touch herself up in the sky by reaching down. So she reached a little further, and a little further, and she went right into the well. She couldn't swim. It was cold. It was dark. She started to cry, and she didn't know what to do. And so she started going, "Help me! Help me! Help me!" What do you think she was saying? Yes, exactly right. She was going, "Help me! Help me!" And she was swallowing water, and she was getting colder, and she was getting more afraid. And all of a sudden, she saw this long, long hand holding a stick. And the voice said, "Olga, Olga, hold the stick, hold the stick." And they pulled her out. And do you know who it was? It was the cobbler. Does anybody know what a cobbler is? They make shoes. He was coming to their house to make spring shoes out of wood. Tofle. And he heard that voice, that little voice coming from, he had no idea where. Help me! Help me! But he followed that voice. He followed it to its source, and he saw her drowning, and he saved her. So I don't know if you have a relationship with your grandparents like I did with my grandmother. My parents were very busy. My father had started a business. He was up at 4 in the morning and came home at 10 o'clock at night, impossible hours, and my mother did all the bookwork. So they didn't have time to tell us stories. They did a very good job of taking care of us. But when we wanted to have someone hold us who had time and wasn't in a hurry, it was Grandma Olga. And then she would tell you a story from long ago. And that story has stayed with me to this day, because I know when I am lost, when I am in danger, when I feel like I cannot do it by myself, I need to be able to call out into the world, "Help me, help me, help me, I need help." So that's something, no matter how old you are, if you're 2, if you're 10, if you're 14, if you think you know it all, you will find out in life there are moments when you know nothing and you'll just have to call out for help. Don't ever be afraid to call out for help. Does that make sense? All right. Thanks a lot. This is the second Sunday of the month, one of our favorite Sundays of the month, because we get to hear from someone who believes in a cause in the Manhattan area with all their heart and being. And today, we are blessed to have Richard Pitts come and share his vision of Wonder Workshop. Richard.
Thank you. Good morning. It's a pleasure being back here with my Unitarian Fellowship family. It's been a couple days, but always feels wonderful. We go back quite a ways. I see some familiar faces and some new faces I haven't seen before, and I look forward to meeting the new faces and shaking hands with my old friends here. Our history goes back to doing programs together here, because I work at the Wonder Workshop Children's Museum. And we are about to reopen our doors on April the 12th of this year, next month, open house from 10 until 3. And a lot of you here have made that possible. Otherwise, you know, it's all about community. And I'm here asking you to yelp me, yelp me. But the reality is it takes a village. No one ever has done anything by themselves. And I think of the times I've been here with the drumming program. I think of the times I've had some of you volunteer at the Wonder Workshop and at our camp area. I think of the time when we put together that multicultural program on Martin Luther King Jr. Day. This is family. And I'm here again asking my family to help support the Wonder Workshop. We have needs. We want to reach up and grab your hand. We need you. We need help supporting our museum overall, our wonderful exhibits, and our outreach programs. It means everything to us. You heard of that book called The Little Engine That Could? Our building that we did have was twice the size of the building we have right now. But I'm here to tell you, we are the little children's museum that could, and it's you who make that possible. Thank you very much for this time.
Being a minister has many rewards, but one of those that are dearest to me is getting to know people deeply and the stories, the context of their lives, where they come from, and where they're going. About 3 or 4 years ago, Laura was involved with taking in kids who needed love into her life, and she found that she didn't always have the skills or the strength or the self-confidence to figure out how to provide the love that she knew in her heart they needed. So we formed a circle of support, and central to that circle was Dick Cattell and Judy Cattell and Corey Zeller. And we met once a month for about a year, and then that kind of dissolved. And guess what happened? One of the great friendships that happened in life between Laura and Dick. Who could imagine that someone who has graduated from Harvard Medical School would be such close and deep friends with this beautiful human being who has found her way from the streets into a full life with children? So all boundaries, all kinds of things get crossed, and a new world is made as two people come together and share from the depth of their experiences, finding out that they are equal. What a gift. It has been my deepest and sincere pleasure to witness the growth of this friendship.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay. So can everybody hear me sitting just like this? Yeah? Okay. I'm going to try to slow down. I tend to go pretty fast when I'm a little nervous. I'm less nervous now because I thought that my kids were going to stay in. And at first they said, can I? And I said, no. And then I was like, oh, okay, yeah, you can, you know. But they didn't, so I'm a little better. Okay. If I stop to think, it's really hard to believe that I have only known Dick for a few years, especially since I have grown up within his presence. I think to who I was then and who I am now, and every part of me is so grateful for all that has come to be. I was a fairly new mother when I met Dick and Judy. The commitment and love that I have for my children was beyond 100%, but as I have come to realize, I lacked some tools to give them everything they needed and deserved. After experiencing firsthand what anguish my children went through, Michael set up a group consisting of Dick, Judy, Corey, Michael, and myself. And we met for a while until all of them came to the same conclusion that I was the one that needed support if I was to have my best to give to my children, and I was going to have my best to give to them. I knew the answer lied somewhere within myself. I knew that I had to become what I wanted for them for it to work. I have never been so motivated in all of my life to change as when I became a parent. I realized that the only way to model and teach my beautiful children how to be happy, healthy, joyful, confident, loving, trusting people was to unpack all of my own baggage once and for all. Openly growing and learning and admitting my shortcomings honestly. And to really live the things I wanted for them. I also had no idea how to truly accomplish this. One of the big roadblocks was that I would have to actually value myself. No way to fake it, because I didn't want to teach my children to fake it. I wanted to teach them to be secure and to know their value. It was decided that Dick would call me and check in to see how things were doing. When he first started calling, I dodged the ringing. And when eventually I didn't feel like I could take it anymore. I answered. But I was going to make it clear that I had nothing to say. He wasn't going to get to me. That was for sure. And we sure weren't going to talk about me, or my dad, or my childhood, or my love life. Okay, maybe those things. But we sure weren't going to get mad at my parents. No way. Nope. Okay, maybe a little, but that's it. And fine for the rest of it, but I'll be damned if we talk about my marriages, miscarriages, misgivings, or mistakes. Or the darkest truths of the things I have done and the things that I have seen, the things I've thought about myself. Nope. That was the line. And I meant it. To be crossed right over and fall headfirst into a relationship with the first person I have ever learned to truly trust, who taught me to trust myself. It wasn't quite that simple. I had a lot of resistance. I liked my stories, so much so that I repeated them to myself often. Stories that explained why I could only ever get so far. Fables about who I was and what was wrong with me. Stories scribed out beautifully, coloring my past and shadowing my future. Thinking back on how it happened, I would have to say magic. Dick probably has a better idea, but to me, the world just started to open up. Petal by petal, I began to blossom. Getting angry with my parents was oddly the first step. I was so sure that I was the problem, that I was this broken thing, that I protected my parents from myself with everything I had. With Dick's friendship, I began to be able to look at my life piece by piece and redefine myself within the truth and with an adult perspective on a child's version. For the first time, I could see that I was not to blame for my childish acts, that running away from home at 15 didn't mean I was an asshole. I just recently realized that the love of my life was in fact an abusive pedophile, for I was a child. I could see so clearly that I never should have been left home at such young ages, and that a 10-year-old crushing and snorting pills at night was a problem, not a problem child. It was here that I was able to forgive myself, get angry at my parents, and ultimately realize the truth. There was no anger needed. We are all the very best versions of ourselves we can be at any given time, and they gave me absolutely everything they had. With this, my relationship with my father began to change. He grew in ways I never thought possible. Here he was, stretching and reaching to meet me. For the first time I can consciously remember, I felt their love. I felt love. Which, of course, had to do with me beginning to see myself as whole and perfectly imperfect. I was beginning to let go of my stories. What? I'm no longer the problem? Not bad, don't deserve to be punished? Huh, where the hell does that leave me? Here's the funny thing. The more you let go of your stories, the more you have to make better choices. I wouldn't say that I owned being a loving, valuable person right away. But I quickly knew, really knew, there were things I would never experience again. I would never again be bruised and broken looking for more. I would never again experience warm white smoke rising from a clear pipe filling the voids within me. Nor would I ever be mistreated, misguided, or used up. I sort of had to grieve these things. I had to release them. They were mine for so long. They were who I was. They were the extent to which I realized joy. And in order to hold out open hands to receive, I had to let go. This was really scary, which is where the trust comes in play. And I know I tested it more than once with Dick, maybe like 746 times and counting. Dick, of course, had a sense it could all go this way. Never have I met someone so patient, someone so sure I could get somewhere, anywhere I wanted to go. Never had I had such a genuine cheerleader of my life, at least not in a voice I could recognize. He was there, and always there, and calm and available, and has a way of making one believe in themselves. He acknowledges my pain in a way that sucks it right out of its cracks and makes it unnecessary to feel it anymore. I had never known that a man could be so genuine, so lovely, so loving, so kind, and care so much. I would come back to the same things over and over and over, and Dick would calmly listen and let me discover these things again until I had enough ground under my feet to accept them. He met me where I was, and that is a different place each time we talk. Getting to know Dick has been a gradual and wonderful experience. He has led a very interesting life, and I find him to be a fascinating person. As it has grown, our talks are not just about me. They are about both of us. Life, joy, fear, hope, and so much more. I am excited to tell Dick news when I have it, and so enjoy news that he shares as well. I sort of feel like he has taken me quickly through the different stages of my life, meeting me in my infancy where I was very needy, through childhood's growth and learning, and held his crown through my teenage experiences and independence. And now we are in the beginnings of an adult relationship. I have gotten to know, trust, and form an attachment with Dick, which in and of itself has transformed my life in so many ways. Experiencing the importance of having such a free and flowing relationship, where I know that not only will I be listened to, but with attentiveness, has greatly and for the better changed my relationship with my children. Discovering what that feels like in relation to my past experiences helped me see how I needed to be more attentive and open with my children so that they would know their value, so they would know they were loved and cherished beyond any limits. Not only could I see the need for change, the changes just happened. And I want to soak them up. I want to hear all the little and big details of their every moment without judging or trying to influence the result. I have a better, stronger bond with these amazing little people I share my life with. All the shortcomings I was afraid of passing on to them have faded right along with the fears. I used to be so frightened for their future because I didn't know another path than the one that I had taken myself. Now I am relaxed. Knowing they only need me to believe in them. This knowledge, as it has slowly crept into my consciousness, has helped build a different structure for all my relationships, past, present, and future. I began to see people in a different light, and with Dick's support, I could start to test the waters of trust and friendship. It's really an incredible gift. To know him is to love him. And I have, at the same time, been able to view myself differently, to view love differently. I am a better quality friend to those I love than I knew I could be. I was unaware of how closed off and locked tight I was for the last 30-some years. I felt love so deeply and saw it so often. I had no idea I wasn't actually experiencing it or even able to give it. I never knew I was so afraid of being vulnerable until within the safety of my relationship with Dick, I have been able to see that. I can see how my own fears and vulnerabilities have and could hurt others, push them away. Whereas before I was so busy protecting myself, I had no idea I was being cold. But if you ignore all the rest of it, Dick has helped me stop the cycle and be love for my children, rather than an observer. And that is the single greatest thing I have ever done.
I've got two piles of cards. Maybe I need two microphones here. Well, I assume that everybody in this room understands what deep introspective work and what a beautiful experience it is to work with Laura on these issues. And I'm reminded that 3 years ago, and I somehow have it pictured right over, you were speaking from right over there, she gave a presentation. And we both sort of forgotten it and can't find the paper, but it was a similar, very powerful expression of what she had learned and was learning, and was just as moved then as I am now when she read this to me over the phone a couple of days ago. I thought, oh my goodness, of course. This is just like 3 years ago, only she has moved an enormous distance in and somehow what comes to my mind now is I have felt, and I don't know when that started, but I have felt that the therapy was really a joint therapy. I mean, she's been working, you've been working for years with great ability and beautiful ability to describe what you're feeling, for years. And so I have just joined a year ago her, you know, her psychotherapy project, and I feel we are, I don't think I've ever felt a more equitable relationship in my professional life. I spent, 40 years listening to people and talking on occasion. And this experience has been ever so much deeper in how it reaches me and has helped you in reaching you, that the she brings, I play off of her. I'm always second to her because she's the lead. She's the boss. She's the one who is the source of all this experience. Very different, as Michael was saying, very different from my experience in life. I was born with a silver spoon, and very, very competent parents who went to college, father, who was a surgeon, and all of that. But that doesn't, never mind, that's somehow off in the, you know, it is not a part of my life now. But in one thing that has happened is that the cards I wrote, because I think only once in my life have I ever been on a podium when I thoroughly enjoyed it and made real good use of it and spoke out, and I guess I'm doing it a second time now. So that plus over the last month realizing my working memory is getting awful. And, you know, it's scary when you can't, when the thought you had disappears suddenly and doesn't come back for a while. And so I was not very comfortable about preparing here. I don't know whether, Michael, you must have an awful lot of power that, because he said, you know, just go with it. And I didn't have any idea whether I could go with it or not, or have to use the cards. One of the things that everything I prepared is going to be thrown out. But some of the context of this. Back maybe 15 to 20 years ago, up until the time I retired, myself, and I can remember myself and other sort of senior colleagues and friends of mine talk about the fact that our training in psychotherapy and psychoanalysis kind of left the emotional human being of the psychiatrist out of the room. And it was, you know, it's like it was based on intellectual ideas. And I always felt that the relationship, the therapeutic relationship, is what is the power of what's happening. And, you know, you've heard a beautiful description from Laurel of how the fact that I'm in tears often when we're talking or because of what we're dealing with, but my feelings are fully in the room and my reactions and my experience, and for me to use episodes from my life in treatment would have been anathema to my people I trained with. But it's brought real life to you, and it's been very useful to you, and that our relationship, it's interesting. I hadn't thought about friendship until Michael mentioned that and so forth. But maybe in the last week or two, that popped up when I was trying to describe what the therapeutic relationship is, and simply just it's a special. It's just a special kind of friendship. And so I have, you know, I've had a marvelous learning experience in working with Laura. And the answer about the magic of the change is, it's both of us, but the real magic is in you, and you have, you know, that's where all these major changes are coming from. It's not something that I just pick up on things that you're talking about and expressing and feeling. And so maybe that's enough. That thank you, Michael, for having set this up. I might just say that it seems to me the holding environment that is the therapeutic relationship is supported here by this fellowship. I mean, our work came out of this fellowship and Michael's idea, and I was trying to kind of push him out of the way with this talking to four different people. And come on, I'm ready. I for 15 to 20 years, I've wanted to work with somebody like Laura. And so this has just been a marvelous experience, and obviously a marvelous experience that I could say the hell with the cards. And but she speaks so fluidly and writes so fluidly and beautifully. You know, that's not me at all. So it's very helpful what I'm learning from Laura, and that a small thing, but with the fact that being aware of my memory difficulties now, I count more and more on the feelings to bring the ideas to mind and so forth. And I can talk to Laura about that, you know, when it's happening while we're working. Incidentally, if you're interested, we mostly occasionally have met face-to-face, but most of the time it's a telephone conversation of an hour, three times a week. And it gives us enough time and, you know, space to really build what you built with my help. So thank you all for making this possible. And thank you, Laura. It's a joy to work with you and be your friend.
Let us remember as we go into this day the sweetness of opening your heart to another who is in pain to discover joy will come out in the end. Let us do the good work of community, which says each of us is important. Each of us has a story. Each of us needs to be heard. We need to listen, and we need to share, and we need to gather together to lift up the best and what it means to be human beings. So this is a great testament to how that works as part of community. Let us stand and sing as you're able from the Teal Hymnal, hymn number 1021, Lean on Me.
Scattered. Is this on? Yeah. There's some scattered through the room, and there are enough to go around. We do have a pianist. Good. First two verses, look on page 3. The first two verses, you go back to the beginning, and then the third verse, you go to where there's mark number 3 at the bottom of that page and sing what's on page number 4. It'll seem like you remember singing along with in the car and on your iPad or iPod, wherever you have it. So let's go, Michael.
Let me share these closing words from Wendell Berry. We clasp the hands of those that go before us and the hands of those who come after us. We enter the little circle of each other's arms and the large circle of lovers whose hands are joined in a dance, and the larger circle of all creatures passing in and out of life who move also in a dance to a music so subtle and vast that no one hears it except in fragments. Share those fragments. And we will be having a deepening UU class here at 12:15. So if anybody wants to come, please do. Have a great day.